Now, you're back on Green Left Radio on 3CR, and we've actually just gone straight into our putting in our second interview on the line. So we're very happy to be joined by Manbir Kohli, a member of the Indian community who is based in Sydney, and he's actually also a fellow community radio presenter based in Sydney as well. He broadcasts the Hinglish language program, Kanta Sunte, on 89.3 FM at on Thursdays 8 to 10pm. And, of course, he has an interest in Indian and Australian politics. Good morning, Manbir.
Good morning, Jacob. Nice to talk to you.
Okay, so just to give our listeners a bit of background, we're having a discussion with Manbir to have a bit of a kind of discussion, to give a bit of a, give a bit of a counter narrative to Modi's kind of visit, who was kind of, you know, given a kind of glowing kind of reception when he visited Australia recently. In fact, he's already back to India from his Twitter page. And I guess to kind of start off, the discussion, Modi has visited Australia, and he was met, you know, with this glowing kind of reception, including Australian politicians openly shaking hands with Modi. And of course, there was a lot of talk about their praising their kind of shared values and their response. And of course, and nothing to kind of say about any of the sort of human rights abuses of the Modi government. And I guess, Manbir, what do you kind of, to give your response, what do you believe is really the kind of real track record of the Modi government?
Thank you for this opportunity first, Jacob. And the Modi government came in with a lot of promise. It had with the earlier government, the Congress government, there had been a lot of economic scams. There was political scams happening. And this had been going on for a few decades. So when the BJP, the party that Mr. Modi belongs to, put up their hand and were touring the country, talking about corruption and how there was black money and he would bring the black money back, etc., etc. There was a lot of hope when the people voted them in 2014. Now, unfortunately, what happened was that the election manifesto says very good things about what they would plan to do. They were planning on sharing the fruits of progress with everybody. There would be equality of justice. But the BJP belongs to a thinking that India belongs to the large Hindu majority, and the others, like Christians and Muslims, are outsiders and do not deserve equal treatment. This was in the background, but many people didn't see that. They voted them in. In the initial euphoric stages, there was a lot of hope. But over time, what we've seen is that there has been a scuttling away of human rights. They've been targeting minorities, and they've got this huge army of an IT cell that generates false narratives. And there have been lynching of Muslims who have been alleged to be carrying beef, which is banned. And generally, there is an ignorance. Mr. Modi sort of doesn't say anything when such events are happening, and he turns a blind eye. So it encourages these violent mobs or the right-wing crazy guys who go out and tarnish the image of the minorities. They hurt minority elements. So that's what's been happening. But again, there's a lot of dog whistling going on, so you cannot exactly pin the blame on Mr. Modi for making any blatant statements, though he has said that. So he's spoken about protesters, and he says you can identify the protesters through their clothes, which means, you know, the way that people, a certain religious group dresses. So obviously that demonizes a large section of society. The way they've been handling protests is again something that leaves much to be desired. Any protest or any opposition to their narrative is seen or shown as anti-national. That if you're not with the BJP, the ruling party, or with Mr. Modi, then you are against the country. And that's a very, very dangerous fascist idea, that if you oppose us, you're against the country. There has been a battling away of press freedoms. The Press Freedom Index puts India at 161 against 180 countries this year, and we were only about 150 last year. So there's been a gradual slide and a perceptible slide in press freedom. Journalists are being targeted in case they ask difficult questions. So that's why there are nothing is being uncovered by the media. There is a compliant media that this party has created. They give them a sort of government sponsorship goes to some of these selected channels who are just mouthpieces of the government. So all in all, we see there's a tightening of the noose around press freedom. Protests are being limited. I wouldn't say that you can't protest in India, but if you do, the trolls come after you. The entire narrative is changed to you being sponsored from foreign countries rather than standing up for your rights. For instance, we've got the Indian wrestlers who are protesting as we speak in Delhi. These are women wrestlers, some of whom have won Olympic medals. They are protesting against a certain minister, a sports minister, who is alleged to have sexually assaulted them. And it's just falling on deaf ears. So even such celebrated people are being demonized by the trolls, by the narrative that, no, these people belong to the opposition. They've been paid by the opposition. So nobody's listening. Mr. Modi is very silent about his own minister, who's in the middle of this huge sexual assault charge. But nothing seems to be happening. He hasn't been suspended. He's still there. So protesting is clamped down on. There's no freedom for the press. Minorities are being demonized. That if you don't control these minorities, the majority, 80% of Hindus, are at risk. So that's what has happened in the last 9 years. And of course, the opposite view is also shared by people who are very loyal supporters of Mr. Modi, who say, there's nothing wrong here. It's all good. You are the problem. And that's a funny situation, because nobody's asking the minorities how you're feeling, but the majority is deciding, we are not curtailing minority rights. So yeah, it's quite a funny, yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Manbir. It's Chloe also here on the show. And just talking about minorities, what are your comments on Modi's government, the Modi government's discrimination towards the Muslim community and also other marginalized community within India? If you could speak a bit about them and the brutality of the bulldozer justice as well.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's a coincidence, but some of the biggest legislative changes that this government has brought in are working against the Muslims. For example, to their credit, it was in the election manifesto that they would take away Article 370 from a Muslim-dominated state in India called Jammu and Kashmir, and Article 370 gave special status to that state. Now, this was part of the election manifesto. A lot of people agree with that decision. But just the way that it was pushed through, there was no, in the election manifesto, it said that they would consult all the stakeholders, but it was just pushed through parliament with a brute majority. There was no discussion. Then they brought in the anti-citizenship rights. These are for people who are escaping persecution from countries based on their religion, and they willfully excluded Muslims from that. They said if somebody is a Hindu and escaping persecution from, say, Pakistan, they can gladly apply to India and say, hey, can you please give me protection? Can you take me into the country? And they would easily be done. But if they were Muslim, they would be denied that right. Now, and then they want to implement the National Register of Citizenship, which is in a way saying that if you're Muslim, you might have to produce documents to prove that your parents came here 70 years ago. So it's really, really hard in a country that that doesn't have paperwork. It's very hard to have, there are people who can't afford to get paperwork, and these are, say, slum dwellers or people who are, you know, living day to day. So to ask them to produce paperwork is going to be very difficult. So some of these acts or legislation that the government implemented seems to be going against the Muslims, and that's what is a perception now, that that this government is anti-Muslim. And it also comes on the back of Mr. Modi's history. In 2002, he was the chief minister, which is like our premier, of a large prosperous state called Gujarat. There had all, and let's be honest, there's always been simmering underground tension between the Hindus and the Muslims in India for centuries. I mean, it's not something that's just happened in the last 10 years. It's always been simmering. But it appears that this government has brought out that simmering tension into the open, and some of their elements that they like to call fringe elements, who are not fringe anymore, a free rein. So there's no check on them. So some of these actions are giving the perception that the BJP is anti-Muslim. So they will say no, and but the reality is not that.
I want to go into a kind of question. We're going to probably skip one question that we sort of had prepared, just because I don't think we sort of have time. And I think this is the question where it is of greater interest. I guess I want to hear some of your comments around, I guess, the attitude of, I guess, the Indian diaspora within Australia, I guess, towards Modi. I mean, obviously there was more than kind of 20,000 who attended Modi's welcome event, but of course
there weren't 20,000 people. But anyway, that's another problem.
But basically, what is your kind of comments on this? You know, do you think this is reflective of kind of majority opinion, or is it kind of more complicated than that?
No, I would agree that it's more complicated. But yes, there is a sizable size of the expat population in Australia who subscribe to his viewpoint, which is quite a ironical contradiction, because they live here in Australia, they've left India because of the conditions there, and they've come here and they expect to be treated equally with, you know, equal rights to protest, to do everything, but they seem to want to deny those rights to the people back in India, which is quite a contradiction. And some of these attitudes have divided the expat community here, and it can be quite vicious at times, and you've been seeing those vandalisms of the temples that have been happening across Australia. So there have been some temples have been vandalized with graffiti. There have been signs put up against Mr. Modi's visit. So there is a lot of division in the community, and unfortunately, that's evolved in the last few years. Prior to that, the Indian community presented a united front. They worked and celebrated together, but now there are splinter groups, and people are just, there are WhatsApp groups that people are fighting in, that's leading to divisions in families and friends. So I would put that blame at the feet of this government for engendering that, or not stepping in and stopping it.
Are there any final comments that you would like to make, Manbir, before we wrap up the interview today?
Look, I think India has progressed very well. It's in the 75 years, it should be the third largest economy in a few years. It's done very well on a lot of things. The process of liberalization started in 1991, and India has blossomed. And the fruits of that progress, the economic progress, have been sort of taken up by this government, claiming that they are the ones that have made that transition possible. While it's a work in progress, but at the same time, there has been a damage to the social fiber, to the social fabric of that country, and it's traveled overseas too. So the expat communities in the UK, in Canada, in USA, they are as equally or even more viciously divided. So I think that is something that needs to stop. Indians are, you know, they contribute to wherever they go quite well. But somehow they are also bringing this negativity and pessimism and viciousness against some minorities. And I think that's got to stop.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Manbir. I think this has actually been a very good informative interview, and I think it's been a very good discussion. So thank you very much for being on our program.
Thank you, Jacob and Colleen. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So we're just speaking to Manbir Kohi. And who is a member of the Indian community that is based in Sydney. And so we just had a bit of a kind of discussion with him, and he gave a bit of, I guess, a sort of counter narrative to this sort of glowing kind of reception that just Modi has just received in his kind of visit to kind of Australia. And one question we didn't really get to ask is we didn't get to talk to him about his comments on the Australian government's kind of cozy relationship with Modi and the Indian government as a whole. But I guess that is something we'll probably get to explore on future kind of programs, especially since, you know, I think as socialists, I think we do sort of have, you know, we do have a bit of a kind of answer to that in a sense that, you know, one of the perspectives that I would kind of argue is that the reason why the Australian government has such a cozy relationship with India is that India is one of the largest, as he kind of concluded, it is one of the largest sort of economies in the world. Indian students provide Indian migration, you know, is a big sort of asset in terms of the kind of Australian economy. But then there's that element. Of course, that's why Modi had obviously all these meetings with business leaders, universities, etc., while I was here, to kind of secure that sort of economic sort of relationship. But here's the other element, and I think this is one of the biggest concerns that we have to be worried about. But basically, the whole Quad meeting that I guess sort of happened in Japan and was supposed to be happening last week, basically Australia is very, very keen on having India as a key ally in their sort of efforts to contain China economically, and also to potentially prepare for some kind of war, and also to utilize them as part of the war drive against China. So yeah, those are some of the kind of geopolitical kind of things I think that are sort of happening in the background that we'll definitely kind of explore and analyze more. Anyway, I'll just play a quick announcement. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM.